This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales operations onto the show to deconstruct the why, what, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Ebster, the leading customer engagement platform for Salesforce. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Now, today we're joined by Marta Kotvis, who is currently running sales operations at Avira Insights. She's been there for 3 years, and we're going to dig into Marta's journey through sales ops at this business. So, Marta, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Happy to be here.
Amazing. So let's kick off by understanding your route into sales ops. I understand you joined the business in sales ops, but previously you're doing something different.
Yes and no, because before joining Avira, I co-owned and co-managed a tech startup, a tech company for 10 years. And as in startup, you do pretty much of everything, a little bit of everything. So I started in sales, basically, at the end of my journey there, I started also doing sales ops, what we now call sales op, right? At that time, I didn't know it was called like that. So a bit of forecasting, a bit of KPIs and stuff like that. And I thought it was pretty amazing. And I really enjoyed that. So when I moved into Avira, that was the direction I was trying to achieve. And in the end, as you can see, I'm now leading the head of sales operation for the global OEM team in Avira.
Got it. So in your own business, you were drawn to the sales side, and then you were also drawn to the ops side. And that's when you got the experience. And then from there, when you were thinking about other things you could do, you were like, okay, I would love to do more of this operation stuff.
Exactly. When I joined Avira, I wanted to stay in sales, but I didn't want to go into the field, but I preferred to do the ops. And this was my dream job.
And so roughly now, how many reps and how many people in the ops team?
We have about 20 salespeople around the world in 3 regional teams. And for now, I'm the only person running sales op. I also work with obviously marketing and other departments, but dedicated to sales ops, I'm the only one.
Got it. Makes sense. And so do you have a one-on-one relationship with every rep?
Yes, definitely one-on-one relationship. More obviously with the team in EMEA, as they are close to me, and not so with APAC or US team, but yeah, we definitely have a one-on-one relationship. I know each of them.
Sure. And then this tech stack that you guys are currently running, I understand you're using Salesforce, but it'd be good to know what else we have.
Exactly. Yes, we are in Salesforce, and I'm also the Salesforce admin from the very beginning. And for data visualization, we use Tableau, which is probably not so a surprise. And for marketing automation and enablement, we use HubSpot, also Sales Navigator, and also a couple of others.
Got it, makes sense. And so in the last few months, how have you and the team adapted to the remote operation, and what have been the biggest challenges?
That was pretty rough, as all our BDMs need to stay remotely, and they are obviously used to working in the field. So I think that the biggest challenge for us is now to, let's say, get close to the type of relationships we had while being able to meet people face to face, now doing it remotely. So building the same level of trust, or almost the same level of trust, I think this is the biggest challenge. Our sales process is actually not not repetitive because we do technology integration. So every project is really different and the sales cycles are pretty long. And because these projects are complex from the perspective of technology and all others, also legal perspective and commercials, it's not straightforward, then the trust is really essential here, the partnership that we are building.
Makes total sense. And I guess the million-dollar question is, what have you guys been doing to build that trust and have anything come close to what you would get in real life?
Yeah, well, I think that each of our BDMs has their own, let's say, magic trick. But I guess that there is no rocket science about that, that we needed to switch to video conferencing. And instead of doing one-on-one or face-to-face meeting and the calls, you have to combine it and do the video conferencing so you can see the people, you can see their body language, and they can also see you. That was, I think, the biggest change.
For sure. And was there anything else that the team was doing differently, whether operationally or culturally, that has had an impact on how productive the reps are?
I guess yes, but each team probably would need to speak for themselves because I guess that each culture is different. The doing the business in China is totally different than in EMEA or in the US. So I think that everybody has their own tricks.
For sure. And so you didn't internally say that going forward, every sales meeting has to be in video. You kind of let the reps do their thing.
Yes, exactly. Because of the specific of the job, so the technology integration bit, which is as I mentioned, each time is different. We don't have that granular, let's say, processes or scripting. So we let BDMs decide what works best for them and their partners, and they have their own ways.
Got it. Do you think when things go back to more normal, do you think that more of the sales process will be remote?
I guess, again, it depends both on the BDM and on their partners. Because obviously now, let's say 80% of business partners need to do it like this, and they may get used to it. But I guess that there will be still a portion of those who prefer face-to-face contact. And there are also BDMs who prefer the face-to-face contact, so they might as well switch back to normal, let's say.
Makes sense. How have the targets or objectives of the reps or the business as a whole been impacted?
Because our sales cycles is pretty long, it can actually last from anything between 250 up to even 500 days. We didn't adjust the targets or objectives specifically because we are looking at it, right? How we are getting our quotas. So yeah, for now we haven't changed that.
Yeah, it's almost like you guys are maybe more insulated from any disruption. If it is such a big thing these companies are embarking upon, and they have to think about it for so long. If not like they were going to buy in the next 3 months, they're like, no, we can't buy. Because they know they may be buying in like 12 months and therefore they'll just see how things go and maybe still be able to do it. Would you agree with that? Or do you think there will be some disruption?
Yeah, I guess from the perspective of new business, I think it might be more challenging because everybody now is thinking, shall I do this investment next year or not? So I guess in this respect, it might have an impact. But as you mentioned, if they do have that money, have the budget, and the investment in technology is always something of a high priority, they'll definitely do it because our technology is integrated into our partners' products and services. So only when they develop their product and services, they can also make sales. So this is the chain reaction here.
That makes sense. How are you able to see, like, we have these 20 reps all around the world. How are you as a sales ops leader able to easily see the pipeline of deals? Do you have some dashboard, et cetera, that like very accurately?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Could you share like more about what the data that you put into that and how it's valuable?
As far as pipeline, we're definitely looking at what is new coming in. And the challenge is now to get to the, you know, what is the ratio of how much pipeline we need to have in order for that to convert into a forecast. These are the things that we are looking at.
Got it. So you're trying to understand exactly how much pipeline a rep has, and then from that data, you're able to define the forecast.
Yes, exactly. But again, three different regions might have three different states. The pipeline structure might be different. So it's not that we have an equal metric for each region or for each rep, because it depends on the territory, on the account.
Got it. Yeah, I'm starting to understand the challenge, the landscape of your role when you have these vastly different cultural places around the world, and you're trying to manage different, like, the pipelines and the reps in those different areas, and it's actually just completely different from having like 20 people in an office in Germany.
Exactly. And on top of it, it's not that each market we started at the same point of time. Obviously, we started in EMEA, so we have more partners here, and the relations are different. And I'd say for the APAC team, we only started like 3 or 4 years ago. So it's totally new market for us, but we think there is also more potential because we are starting, let's say, from scratch, right? Not as an EMEA.
Got it. Going back to that forecasting point, Well, what are you doing now to try and make that forecast more accurate, especially in these times? Is there any strategy for measurement that you're using to try and make that reliable?
It's hard for me to say, because on one hand, there are a lot of things that that play a role here. On one hand, the company went through a reorganization, so we have a different owners now. So they probably will require some different kind of information that we get. Basically, we are running our forecast, the same for the last maybe two years, that we have a forecast based on our forecast in Salesforce, but then we have a worst case and best case, let's say, scenario, right? And we are now, we are also seeing it in Tableau now. This is how we do it. But it's hard to say that if anything changed because of the situation now.
Yeah, got it, because of the really long sales cycle.
Cool.
So, and then now on the KPIs, if we go back to your work in the previous business, what do you think, this business as well, over the two, what do you think has been the most insightful metric that you have measured?
We try to focus on activity. However, in my previous business, the sales cycles weren't too long, and the face-to-face meeting or one or two, we could actually get a pretty good indication of if the project is going to happen or not. Whereas here, it doesn't have to be like that, because there are many other factors that influence the progress on the project. So activity is essential, but there are also other things.
Got it. And so what do you mean by activity? You mean like emails sent between reps and prospects?
Well, looking at activities, meaning in the sales process, we have obviously like qualification, then we have a technical evaluation process, that we have commercial negotiations. So as long as the process is, let's say, moved forward, right, we will see if it makes sense, and then we will be closer to, let's say, to knowing the when it's project going to live, how big will be the opportunity here.
Got it. So you're basically saying that the most important thing to measure for you as a sales ops leader is how fast the deal is progressing and how much activity the rep is taking on for that account.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Awesome. So, and then onto the final question, which is about who in your career related to sales ops has been the most, or have taught you the most?
Mm-hmm. Pretty hard one, because I didn't have, you know, a sales ops manager or a VP who I could look upon to. However, my managers that I work with, my sales VPs, the current and previous ones, and also our marketing VP, and obviously the salespeople are of a big influence. They inspire me by asking questions, by giving me challenges, what can be done, if it can be done, to improve in that role.
Got it. And then is there somebody else in the sales ops world that maybe you don't know that you would like to take for lunch?
Yeah, there is a guy. I'm not sure. He's running his own company, so it is rather of an entrepreneur. But when I look in his videos and his podcasts, he's talking a lot about the sales process, and what he's doing is pretty amazing. His name is Philip Strawman from the company called Comex. We also cooperate with them on the marketing automation. Email marketing automation.
Got it.
He's really data driven, and he's trying, or he's almost aiming to automate pretty much everything based on, you know, flows and it's pretty amazing what he's doing.
Got it. We'll have to hunt him down and see if he's suitable for the show. Amazing. So, Marta, thank you so much for coming on. What I really liked, it was really, I don't think we've had someone come on, at least I don't think so, with a sales cycle as long as yours, which is like can be up to a year and a half. And so it's fascinating to understand both that dynamic with the way that you have these very disparate reps in different geographies with different cultures. So that was a super interesting viewpoint. So Marta, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you, Tom. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.